Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to this meeting of the Planning Control Committee of North Harts District Council. And as you can see, we've moved the meeting to here, which is the main hall of the Eatmail Centre, Eatmail Way in Letchworth. The date is Thursday, the 20th of July, 2017, and the time is approximately 7:30. Firstly, we're going to the agenda and the apologies. I've had apologies from Councillor Bill Davidson. Councillors, you've received the minutes of the meeting of the Planning Control Committee held on the 29th of June. I understand that you have had the opportunity to digest them. Are there any operational changes that you'd like to make, or are you happy with them?
Happy to.
Thank you very much. I've had no notification of any other business. Members of the public and the press may use their devices to film, photograph or do a sound recording of the meeting, but please raise your hand to let me know that you are doing this so that I can inform all present. Please do not use flash and disable any beeps or other sound notifications that may emit from your device. In addition, can I remind all present that in line with the council policy, this meeting is being audio recorded. Can speakers please wait until they have a microphone before speaking? Could members please, along with officers and public speakers, announce their names each time they speak and speak directly into microphones to assist members of the public? To clarify the matters for registered speakers, members of the public have 5 minutes for each group of speakers, i.e. 5 minutes for objectors and 5 minutes for supporters. This 5 minute time limit also applies to member advocates. The bell will sound after 4.5 minutes as a warning, and again at 5 minutes to signify that the speaker must cease. I have varied the order of business so that item number 10, which is the land adjacent to A505 Old North Road, Royston, will now be considered in front of item number 9, which is the land north of Houseman and Avenue and Lindsay Close, Royston. Members are reminded that any declarations of interest in respect of any business set out in the agenda should be declared as either a disclosable pecuniary interest or a declarable interest, and are required to notify the chairman of the nature of any interest declared at the commencement of the relevant item on the agenda. Members declaring a disclosable pecuniary interest must withdraw from the meeting for the duration of the item. Members declaring a declarable interest, which requires that they leave the room under paragraph 7.4 of the Code of Conduct, can speak on the item but must leave the room before the debate and vote. Public participation. There are a number of speakers on the different items that we are going to be debating this evening, but one addition that I have allowed as chairman is that item number 6, Mr. Denyer, who will be speaking on behalf of the applicant for the cabinet. Okay, if you're happy with that, everybody content, that's fine. Again, with your permission, I will introduce the speakers as they arise. And so without further ado, let's go on to item number 6, page 1 of your agenda, which is to discuss the cabinet, High Street, Reed in Royston, and I'd like to ask Anne McDonald if she'll introduce the report.
Anne McDonald speaking. Thank you, Chairman, and good evening, members and members of the public. I have 3 updates, which are items received since the publication of the committee report. The first is an email sent by Ian Gawley to members on the 17th of July, forwarding an email with 4 attachments sent by Mr. Edwin Kilby. The attachments are 1, a briefing note from Save the Cabinet Action Group, 2, further representations prepared by Anthony Miller, dated the 26th of June 2017, 3, a viability report prepared by Anthony Miller, and 4, a letter from Philip Goddard. The second update is an email received on the 17th of July from Dale Ingram threatening the council with judicial review action. She claims that if the application is determined, it is unreasonable on the basis that the decision taker has failed to take account of the material consideration. Ms. Ingham claims that officers have not taken full account of all information submitted and also states that the Trinity Solutions Assessment, which is the report prepared by the council's expert, needs to change its methodology to revise its recommendation from one of commercially unviable to one of commercially viable. My response to this is that officers have received, read, analysed and fully considered all information provided by all parties. As set out in the committee report, the recommendation is fully considered and justified, and the allegation that all the material has not been considered is unsubstantiated and false. Regarding the methodology used by the council's expert, Mr. Lawton at Trinity Solutions, as he is the expert in this field, it is his choice which methodology is acceptable to use. Our view is that there is no substance to this judicial review threat. The third update is an email from local MP Solo Rahield, who objects to the application. He states that he has seen the papers provided by the Save the Cavern Action Group, which is the items mentioned in update one, and he supports their points. This application is a full planning application for the retention and change of use of the Cavernet Public House to a single dwelling house, and has been called into planning committee by Councillor Morris in the wider public interest. The fact that this application is retrospective is irrelevant to the consideration of the case. There are two associated listed building applications for the internal works, which will be determined at a later date. Tonight, members are only being asked to consider the principle of the change of use. The Cabinet last traded the public house in 2011. It was offered for sale from July 2011 through 2012. The public house was advertised for sale regionally and nationally and resulted in 27 viewings. Based on the location of the property, its Grade 2 listed status, and the start-up cost, there was no interest. The property was then sold at auction in October 2015 and bought by the applicant. In April 2014, the Cabinet was registered as an asset of community value by the Parish Council. Under the terms of the scheme, in July 2015, the then owner informed North Hertfordshire District Council of their intention to sell the Cabinet, and the NHDC informed the Parish Council. This gave the Parish Council a six-week time period to decide if they wished to buy it. At that time, the Parish Council did not express an interest to purchase the Cabinet, and so it was then sold at auction. The applicant has submitted a viability statement prepared by Mr. Culverhouse, setting out that based on either a wet trade only or on a combined wet trade and food offer, the public house is not viable. The council has had this viability report independently assessed by Michael Lawton from Trinity Solutions, and he has also concluded that the Cabinet is no longer viable. The council also used Mr. Lawton to assess the viability of the Fox and Hounds Public House in Barley in 2015. In that instance, he concluded that the public house was viable. That application was refused and then dismissed at appeal. The council therefore has no reason to doubt Mr. Lawton's expert recommendation that the Cabinet is not viable in this instance. The Save the Cabinet Action Group has been formed, and they have employed the services of Dale Ingram, who has raised objections to the application on their behalf. The objections put forward by the Save the Cabinet Action Group include criticism of the viability reports provided by the applicant and by Mr. Lawton, stating that their figures are flawed. In addition, they go on to set out that viability should include both commercial viability and social viability. They give examples of how public houses can be run on a social enterprise basis, with a low interest loan from the Public Works Board. They're advocating that the Parish Council could apply for such a loan and that the public house could be run on this basis. Alternatively, they have set out that they have a cash buyer available and that if bought, the pub could be run on a low cost, not for profit basis for a few years until trade becomes re established, if it does. In my view, to advocate that the public house could be run like this further concludes that the public house can no longer be run on a purely commercial basis, and it supports the conclusion that it is no longer viable. The existing local plan does not have a policy to seek the retention of public houses within rural communities. The emerging local plan has policy ETC 7. This policy states that if documentary and viability evidence can be provided to show that all reasonable attempts to sell or let the premises have failed, the change of use can be granted. In this instance, the marketing information provided has shown that the public house was unattractive to other commercial operators before it was sold at auction. I have asked Nigel Smith, the Council's Principal Policy Officer, whether the term viability within the Emerging Local Plan Policy, ETC 7, includes social viability or if the term purely relates to financial viability. His response is quite lengthy, so it is tabled for information. So it's in front of you, members. It's this email here that I've written at the top with my name, Anne McDonald, and the reference number. In summary, he concludes that it relates to financial viability only. Furthermore, he goes on to state that the text at paragraph 5.38 of the Emerging Local Plan states that if a local facility, such as a pub, is listed as an asset of community value, that this can provide additional protection if owners wish to sell it, and that this can be a material consideration in determining planning applications. He concludes that the ATV route and the additional protection is the best means of considering the social implications and of these being delivered. However, as I have already set out, the Parish Council did not wish to purchase the cabinet when they had the opportunity to do so. And in this instance, that opportunity and the desire to run the pub on this social enterprise basis is lost. Claims have been put forward that there have been offers to buy the cabinet and to run it as a public house both before it went to auction and afterwards. In my view, these claims are irrelevant because they do not change the recommendation that the public house is no longer viable, made by the applicant and supported by the council's expert, Mr. Lawton. The application is therefore recommended for approval and members are asked to support this recommendation. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much for that. We have a couple of registered speakers this evening. First of all, I'd like to invite Mr. Mike Howells, who is a representative of Save the Cabinet Action Group, to speak and address. Good evening, sir. Welcome.
Good evening.
Please have a seat.
No, I'd rather stand.
I thought
that'd be that's okay. Good evening. My name is Michael Howes. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I speak on behalf of the community of Reed and the many supporters of the campaign to save the cabinet. We're here for one simple reason. We want to save the last pub in our village. You're being asked to consider a retrospective application for the conversion of the cabinet, a registered asset of community value, to a house. Why is the application retrospective? Why? We're dealing with a Grade 2 listed building, also dealing with an experienced property developer. You'll draw your own conclusions. National and local planning policy provides a presumption in favour of the retention of local services such as pubs. Local policy also provides an exception in certain circumstances, but in order to succeed, the applicant must show two things: that the pub is no longer viable, and that reasonable attempts to sell or let it as a pub have failed. Neither of these tests have been met. As for viability, when NHDC listed the cabinet as an asset of community value, it was with the express expectation, as required by the Localism Act, that it could continue to serve as a pub. And yet your planning officers, in their report, failed even to mention most of the robust professional evidence put forward by us that there is a viable future for the cabinet as a pub. So we invite you to disregard the conclusions of this shockingly biased report and determine the matter on the evidence as a whole, not just those parts highlighted by your officers. Consider the evidence of the highly successful publican at the Fox and Duck Thurfield, Ivan Titmus, the chartered surveyor, Anthony Miller, Philip Goddard, a well-respected local businessman, all of whom are clear about the cabinet's viability. Mr. Goddard even made a cash offer to the applicant to purchase the freehold for continued commercial use as a pub, but was rebuffed. Mr. Goddard remains ready to move forward the moment the pub is marketed. Look at the evidence of the last tenant. That, had it not been for misappropriation of funds, the cabinet would probably still be trading today. Nothing to do with viability. Look carefully at the various reports. The applicant's viability report examines the cabinet only as a gastro pub for fine dining and as a wet-only establishment. You don't need to be an expert to work out and realise that most rural pubs offer drinks and traditional pub fare, a model that the report completely ignores. As a result, this report provides no useful evidence on which you can properly judge the Cabinet's viability. The report by Trinity Solutions assumes that any future owner would be saddled with a substantial mortgage at 8% interest. It's far more likely that a future owner of the Cabinet will be a cash buyer who doesn't need to borrow or the community. Interestingly, if you leave out the mortgage, Trinity's other assumptions actually demonstrate that the Cabinet would quickly generate a healthy profit. Anthony Miller, a leading expert in the field, judged that the Cabinet is clearly viable. We invite you to consider his two reports and to conclude that lack of viability has not been proved. Then let's consider the sale of the building. We've submitted evidence. I have it here. We've submitted evidence that demonstrating repeated interest over time in buying or renting the Cabinet as a pub. It's clear that the previous owner's insistence on an unreasonably high purchase price, coupled with their unwillingness to engage, led to its continued closure. In summary, the evidence demonstrates that the factors allowing the planning authority to depart from the presumption in favour of retention of local services such as pubs have not been proved. We've circulated a list of reasons for refusal to members. In determining this case, we invite you to give particular weight to the following three planning law concerns: protecting a valued community asset under the local plan and national policy, and protecting its status as a listed building in a conservation area. The special interest and characters of which would be substantially undermined by the loss of the pub use from the building. Sustainability considerations, such as the employment opportunities the Cabinet has generated, especially for young people, and the promotion of a healthy, interactive community when this is the last pub in our village. On behalf of the local community, we ask you to please refuse this application.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Members, do you have any questions of clarification of Mr. Howe's presentation? Mr. Councillor Rice.
Is he on? Councillor Myron Rice, good evening, sir, and thank you for your presentation. Could I ask you, as the pub stopped trading in 2011, the town has obviously been without a pub now for some 7 years, and when it was being marketed, was there any attempt then by your association to buy that pub?
When you say my association, you mean the Save in the Cabinet campaign?
Yes.
No, because we only formed that once the planning applications had gone in September of last year.
Thank you.
Members, are there any other questions? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'd now like to invite Councillor Gerald Morris to speak to us as a councillor advocate. Good evening, Councillor. Welcome.
Good evening. Can I sit down?
Please do.
Thank you. District Councillor Gerald Morris. Good evening. I'm going to speak to you in support of retaining the Cabinet as the only pub in the village. There are studies showing both that it's viable and not viable. The applicant study, produced on the insistence of NHDC, says that a pub which has existed for 400 years is now and forever unviable, when we know that it closed because one manager ran it badly and misappropriated funds, not because it was a poor business. Yet its potential customer base has increased in line with the increase in the local population. The new houses in Royston and Buntingford, the Cabinet is located between the two. We know that people now go out and drink far more. We all know of pubs in quiet locations that are very successful. This is often their appeal. An interesting location in a picturesque village was always part of the attraction of the Cabinet. We should rely on our local knowledge rather than remote studies. I cannot hope to cover all of the issues raised within the case officer's recommendation. However, I will comment on the conclusion of 4.4.1. It states that this location is no longer economically viable. If it had not been viable, it would not have lasted for centuries. It closed because of business irregularities and not because of its long-term ability to trade successfully. The case officer states there was a low number of dining covers. The restaurant seated 52 people with an additional 14 people in the bar and a private dining area, a total of 66. The large garden was also used for more dining and drinking in the summer. It was also a wedding venue. Hardly a location with low dining covers. Conclusion 4.4.1 also criticises the lack of parking. The car park is larger than many pubs. Take the Tally Ho in Parkway, and the Green Man in Triplow has virtually no off-street parking. There is sufficient parking in the car park and street. It seems to have been forgotten that many villagers walk there, and it was a destination for ramblers. Neither groups need parking. Presumably, it has not escaped the applicant's notice that if he's granted planning permission, he could later apply to build a second house in that car park. The officer also concludes that the overall loss to the village will be minimal. The loss of the only pub in the village is not minimal. Look around at the number of villagers here this evening. They do not share the officer's opinion, and nor do I. The case officer points out in 4.4.5 that the applicant may need to be rehoused. So an applicant who was circumspect with the original information he provided for the parish council, our conservation officer and our planning officers then lodged a retrospective application. I understand that it's not certain that he's even living there. The applicant is a company director of RKN Developments in Essex. He lists himself as a property consultant with a correspondence address of Thaden Manor, Essex. I would have thought if he is living there, he's quite capable of paying for his own rehousing when he sells the pub. No, I do not think we need to worry about rehousing him. The cabinet remained unsold because the previous owners had overpaid prior to the 2008 crash. Then they could not reconcile themselves to accepting considerably less than they had paid. That is why it remained empty and not because of lack of viability. What the original owners needed, and this is what happened, was for a purchaser who was prepared to pay over the odds, valuing it not as a pub, but as a house, and therefore worth more. I understand from the Read Action Group that the applicant told a witness from camera at the auction that he was buying it for a house. The good news is that the Read Action Group has assembled villagers who are prepared to buy the pub. You've all been emailed a letter from one of these people, and he also explains how he previously tried to buy the pub. The solution to this sorry state of affairs is to refuse planning permission. Do not allow a planning system to be used in this way. There are times when I believe we need to send a clear message that this is not acceptable. Thank you.
Do you have any questions or clarification of Councillor Morris's presentation? No, you've got a fly. Thank you, Councillor. I'd now like to invite Mr. Denyer, who is the applicant's representative. Good evening, sir. Welcome.
Hello. Good evening. Firstly, I'd like to say thank you very much to the committee and the members of the public for listening to me this evening. I'm here to put forward a statement by Richard Newman in support of the planning and listed building consent application for the Cabinet Read. My name is Thomas Denyer. As a local Hertfordshire resident and an aviation professional, I'm here to speak on behalf of Richard Newman, the owner of the Cabinet, since purchased in October of 2015, at which he was the only bidder at auction. Richard Newman has put forward three considerations for the committee, the first of which is a continuation of the designated use of the Cabinet as a public house commercially viable. This is firstly not a matter of sentiment, it's a matter of business, and it must run at a sufficient profit to be viable. Culver House report on the viability concluded that the business would be trading at a loss of over £24,000 per annum in 2015, thus resulting in the business being considered unviable and unsustainable at the present time and in the long-term future. The Trinity Solutions review of the port commissioned by the local planning authority came to the same conclusion, that the cabinet is no longer commercially viable. The second consideration, is the proposed use as a dwelling the most appropriate and sustainable use? Firstly, the local community failed to register any interest in the property to acquire the cabinet as an asset of community value when the property was advertised for sale. Notwithstanding, Culver House report on alternative uses concludes, the provisions within the National Policy Planning Framework and the Emerging Policy ETC7, which only carries limited weight, have been met and that the application for change of use should be permitted. Lastly, are the works carried out by the applicant acceptable? The North Hertfordshire District Council, Conservation Officer and Enforcement Officer aware of the works as they were carried out both before and after Richard Newman took possession. The Conservation Officer's advice is that the works are acceptable if change of use is approved. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, members of the public, thank you very much for listening to me this evening.
Thank you for your lights and we'll remain for just one moment.
Of course.
Councillors, do you have any questions of clarification of Mr. Denyer's presentation? No? Thank you very much indeed. I'd like now to return to invite Anne McDonald to respond to any issues that may have been raised during the speaker's presentations. No further additions.
No, thank you, Jim. I think everything is quite clear from my initial presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillors. Councillor Muir.
I'd just like to ask a question about retrospective planning. It is my understanding that when we look at retrospective, if we would have given that permission in the first place for what he wants to do, we would say yes. And in this case, what you're doing is saying yes, because if he applied before he altered anything, permission would have been given.
I'm not speaking. Correct, yes. Is this working? That's correct. The councillor may say yes.
Thank you.
Councillor Bishop.
Hello, is that working?
Yes.
We've seen quite a few change of use applications, from pubs to domestic dwellings. And I'm sure we'll see a lot more. The ones that come to mind most recently are the White Horse in Kimberley, where we had the District Council appoint consultants who came to the conclusion it would not be viable. The Planning Committee actually rejected the application, and the White Horse has now been bought and will continue to run as a pub. I'm sure many people in this room know of pubs that are small, don't necessarily offer a huge dining offer, but they do okay. There's certainly one in St. Paul's Alden, where I live. The whole aspect of viability is very subjective. And you can probably get 10 people to produce reports and they'll all have 10 different conclusions. I choose to believe that it would be viable, and I'll be voting against the auditor's recommendation.
Yes, Mrs. Hill.
Thank you. I think it's quite appalling, but unfortunately we can't do anything about planning law, that the applicant has been allowed to carry on with work, even though it was reported early on that this was a Grade 2 listed building and no enforcement action was taken. But unfortunately, we are where we are and the law is as it stands. I'd just like some clarification from the officer on the fact that the council had the applicant's report independently assessed but didn't have the objector's report independently assessed, and just clarification on why that is.
Can you answer?
Thank you, Councillor Hill. We have no reason to doubt the council's expert opinion. You know, he's a professional we've used before, and if we were to doubt his opinion, and then where would we stop? I mean, how many times do we need to keep having expert opinions reassessed? Our protocol is that we have one expert report, we accept the information put forward by the applicant, and then we have that independently assessed, and we've got no reason to doubt the expert's answers. Thank you.
Councillor Rice.
Thank you, Chair. Well, this is a very emotional application for the people of Reed. Firstly, I agree with the Parish Council. To grant these retrospective applications undermines the integrity of the planning process. I never like retrospective. Also, paragraphs 28 and 70 of the NPPF encourages the retention and development of local services and community facilities in villages, as does the ETC7 in the Emerging Local Plan. That's the emotional side. Then we've got to look at the planning side. It stopped trading in 2011, so for 6 years there has been no pub in the town. In the village. I do apologise to the villagers. I'm used to living in a town. And then in 2014, I believe, it became an ACV. And it was understandable that after 3 years, they wanted to safeguard the possibility that they could have a pub. During that time, it was marketed, I understand, for 2.5 years as a pub. And there were no people, I believe there were 27 viewings, but nobody considered it a viable operation.
Be quiet, please.
So then it was marketed as a possible D1 as well as a B1, looking at other alternatives to be advantageous to the village. Again, there were no interest shown. Then the owners put the pub up for auction, and as they should, they notified NHDC, but at that time Reed Parish Council and whatever other organisations within Reed Parish Council then had 6 weeks in which to decide whether to purchase or not. No decision was made in 6 weeks, and had they done that, obviously they'd had 6 months to complete. You then have got to read the advice from Trinity Solutions, and I have read the full report, and their conclusion is it's not viable as a pub stroke restaurant, which is obviously the same reason that the possible 27 viewings or any takers over the period of the 2.5 years whilst it was on sale. So therefore, based on planning considerations and not emotional considerations, taking into account the advice of the conservation officer in Appendix 2 and the conclusion of the planning officer, I will be supporting the recommendation that planning permission be granted.
Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Smith.
Could you pass the microphone to the room, please?
Thank you. So as councillors considering this application, I think the first thing we obviously have to consider are there planning grounds to oppose the application? Secondly, if so, are they robust enough that if the decision was appealed, that we could, well, that the appeal wouldn't be successful? So it seems from this report that we've come to the conclusion, or the officers come to the conclusion that the viability assessment, which says the pub wouldn't be viable, was a fair and reasonable report, and its conclusions were fair and reasonable. So, on that basis, it seems perhaps unlikely that any challenge, if it be a judicial review, would be successful. However, my understanding is that all that we would have to show in making our decision is that the decision was fair and reasonable, rather than 100% correct. So would it also not be fair to say that the assessments that the pub would actually be viable would also be fair and reasonable, and as such we'd have good grounds to defend any appeal?
Would you like to comment on that, sir? Mr. Ellis?
I think Councillor Smith might be confusing the test of a decision which may or may not be challenged under judicial review to the applicant's right of appeal. So if there is a judicial review against any decision this evening, be that a grant of planning permission or a refusal of planning permission, the test that the courts would examine is, has a fair and reasonable decision been made? And as long as due process is followed and everything's legally done, then any decision based on material considerations can quite easily be fair and reasonable. The test on an appeal is obviously only the applicant has a right of appeal. There is no third party right of appeal. So if planning permission is refused, if members take the view that it is viable to run as a pub and they refuse planning permission, then the test is not, is that a fair and reasonable decision? The test that the inspector is going to look at is, has the council's decision been based on reasonable evidence that they think it's viable to be run as a pub? And the issue there is that our view is that our evidence, or the evidence that's been tested by our expert, is that it's not viable as a pub. So the test is slightly different. I don't think you need to worry about judicial reviews in refusing or granting planning permission, because most decisions are going to be fair and reasonable. But the concern that we would have is that if you went to refuse planning permission and then you were to defend that decision and appeal, as our expert has told you, they think it's not viable to be run as a pub, then we would be concerned that you wouldn't have sufficient technical evidence to justify that decision.
Thanks. Can I just come back briefly? Okay, so my next question would be, why would the viability assessments, which say it is viable, why would they not be deemed sufficient evidence?
The viability assessments are saying that it should be run on a social basis. So they're changing the emphasis behind how the pub can run. So they're saying it can either be bought outright with a cash buyer, per cash purchaser, although we're not told at what price they're offering, or it can be run through a public works loan system where the parish council can apply for a very, very low interest rate, which is much more competitive than a commercial operator could achieve on a commercial basis. So the viability report, in my view, cannot really be considered to be a fair representation of a commercial viability, because on Mr. Lawton's report is assessing the pub on the basis of commercial viability, which is what our policies require, whereas the emphasis behind the viability report from prepared by the Save the Capital Action Group is that the pub can be run on a more social basis. Thank you.
That's from Mrs. Hill.
Thank you, Chairman. I think Councillor Bishop summed it up when he said that viability is subjective. It is, and we have two reports that show different assessments of the situation, one to be viable, one to be unviable. Without actually undermining Trinity Solutions report, if you look at 4.3.7, there's a number of so-called critical factors contributing to their conclusion. One of which is Reed is a small village and not sufficient population for a local pub. When this pub was at its most successful, a huge number of the trade came from outside of Reed. It wasn't just Reed, it came as far as London. It was a very famous pub, and so they weren't relying on the village only. If you go through all the other points made, the pavements, the street lights, lack of network of narrow roads, narrow lane, car park. Actually, nothing's changed from when it was a hugely successful pub. So I'm afraid on this occasion, unfortunately, I think I'm going to have to go against the officer recommendation and agree totally with Councillor Bishop's views on this one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Experts. I love experts. Obviously, the situation is you look at reports and you read them. Now, I've read everything. I've made a point of it. And I must admit, it's quite interesting when you actually look at two experts' reports. And I am half Irish, and it's interesting to note they both start in different places. The thing is, it's how you actually decide which viability report you give weight to. Now, I must admit, I've read Trinity's assumptions, I've read Mr. Miller's assumptions, and I must admit, I lean towards the objector's viability report in this particular instance. It's a shame we're not looking at listed building consent after this, because that in turn is retrospective. And it does seem odd to me that professionals aren't able to know how the process works, in the sense that if you buy a listed building and you want change of use, the first place you start is change of use. The second place you start is listed building consent. Before you gut the building, before you change the building, before you do anything with it. That is the letter of planning law. Unfortunately, with planning law also, we have to look at this like none of that ever happened. Which you could honestly say the law is an ass, but unfortunately it's an ass we have to work. Now, in this particular instance, I unfortunately do not agree with the officer. I think we should not agree with her assumptions, in the sense that we should grant, I think we should refuse. And that is the way I will be going, Chairman.
Could you pass the microphone to Councillor Steers-Henskin?
Councillor Steers-Henskin, yes, thank you, Chairman. It seems to me the nub of this application is the, and why we're talking about viability, is that normally we would refuse an application like this. Because of ETC 7. So we are in a situation where we have a conflict about viability. I think the points that are the question that Councillor Mrs. Hill initially asked, why haven't we examined the objector's viability report in the same way we have the applicant's, is very valid. We have two possible interpretations. It seems to me that in that case, we should be erring on the side of refusing the application on the basis that that's what ETC 7 is all about. In terms of whether this is economic or social, then talking about it as a social basis of the viability is slightly misleading, because if you start something with a different arrangement on a social, as a social enterprise, it still works, it still becomes economically viable. You've only got to go down to Preston to see a pub that started exactly like that, and which is thoroughly viable. So it seems to me that to say that it's only social, therefore it's not going to be economically viable, is misleading. Therefore, I should be voting for refusal.
Thank you. Councillor Harry Spencer-Smith.
Thank you. I go back to what we were told by our first presenter this evening, which is the fact that actually it's the debt on this business which has prove such a problem. I know we're not here to discuss the running of businesses, but I think that hasn't been given sufficient weight, and the debt is there because of the high valuation of the property, and that is there because of the potential to turn it into a house, which we are being asked to do, to be bounced into doing, you could say. I think it does have potential to run. I know the Red Lion. If it's not saddled with debt and there's a cash buyer, I think it has potential to be viable. So I'll be voting to support the candidate.
Thank you, Councillor Mantle.
Thank you, Councillor Mantle. In all of this discussion, one thing that's bothering me is that we seem to say there's an automatic assumption: if it's not commercially viable as a commercial enterprise, then it must be okay to turn it into a house. It seems that there's something missing in the middle. It's called the community value of the facility. Has on a number of occasions been faced with this situation, and we've been fairly consistent that the interests of the community in which the business is situated actually are important. And to me it seems that it's just too big a leap to say, because it's not viable, it must be turned into a house without any proper exploration of alternative models and alternative ways, which is why I don't feel that this is an appropriate application for this committee to grant, certainly not at this stage.
Thank you, Councillor. Please pass the baton down, please. Well, very good relating, wouldn't we? Councillor Clark.
Could have invested a few more.
Is this where I drop the baton? Council.
You're Great Britain.
Council Paul Clark. Like Council Hill, I have concerns that we seem to believe one independent expert and not validate the other one. I'm sure that he is reputable as the last one, and the case is made on it. And Councillor Mantle makes a very good point about the community value. We are meant to, as we discussed last night at full council, meant to work with our partners to provide an attractive and safe environment for our residents where diversity is welcomed and disadvantages are supported. But the point is, work with our community, which is what is happening here. There is a commercial aspect which is not part of planning. So therefore, similar to other councillors, I will not be supporting the officer's recommendation in this particular instance.
Does any other councillor wish to make a contribution? In which case, if you hold on one. Sorry, I was just taking advice. If it is in your minds to move a refusal, I would need a proposer and a seconder and a reason for refusal. Councillor Rice.
Before that, Chair, I would move to recommend the officers.
You'd granting them?
Yeah. The recommendation that unconditional planning permission be granted.
Fine, thank you. Do you have a second? Councillor Muir.
That'll allow everybody to vote against it.
It has been moved that the application be granted and seconded by Councillor Muir. Those in favour of the recommendation to grant? Thank you. Those against? Do you have a seconder?
No, the proposal needs to include the reasons.
Yeah.
but I need to say a reason for refusal very clearly in the proposal. My proposal is that this application be refused because of the detrimental impact to the life of the community of the loss of this facility, contrary to whichever policy it is in the national policy framework.
Having listened to the debate in terms of how it's turned, it's actually fairly straightforward which policies you're relying on. And I would suggest the following wording. In the opinion of the local planning authority, the change of use of these premises to residential use would lead to the loss of a valuable community facility, the last public house in the village of Reed. The change of use, therefore, conflicts with the requirements of paragraphs 28 and 70 of the National Planning Policy Framework and policy ETC7 of the Emerging Local Plan.
Thank you.
Councillor Michael, you're happy with
fine.
That?
That's what I was trying to say.
Do you have a seconder? Councillor Steers has one.
Can we somehow incorporate in that the issue on viability, because there is doubt also that we're only looking at one particular report, another report assumes that it could be viable, and also the points in 4.3.7 I don't consider strong reasons to say that the pub couldn't be viable, because all those situations are still there of when it was viable.
Mr. Ellis.
My suggestion is, I mean, it's up to the committee, but my suggestion is you don't actually need to declare whether or not you consider it's viable as a public house, and I don't think many people in this room are actually qualified to judge that. It's implicit in the reason for refusal that if the applicant were to go to an appeal, the council would have to put forward some form of evidence, and of course third parties have a right to interact with the appeal process, and all of the evidence that the objectors have put forward will go into the mix as well, that the inspector will consider. So I don't think you need to be explicit about that. It's implicit that the council are very concerned about, or the committee are very concerned about, the conflicting evidence, and have decided that on that basis it doesn't comply with the policies that are referred to in the reason.
Thank you. So we have therefore a proposal for refusal for the reasons that Mr. Ellis has explained. It has been seconded by Councillor Steers Hanscom. Those in favour of refusing the application? And those in favour? Are those against?
Two.
Thank you. That application is refused. I understand there are a number of supporters here from Reed. We would love to have you stay for the rest of the meeting, but I'm quite happy to have a 5-minute recess.
Yeah, okay.